Cliff College is an evangelical learning community rooted in God's Word and Spirit for the purpose of equipping God's people for practical ministry and cutting-edge missional engagement.
For more than 100 years, we have trained people for mission and evangelism and have seen our students go on to do extraordinary work for the kingdom of God. In this podcast, we'll be hearing some of their stories and finding out what insights they have to share about their ministries and the communities they serve.
Welcome to Ministry Roadmaps, a podcast from Cliff College. Welcome. I'm really excited to welcome you to the first Ministry Roadmaps podcast. I'm excited about who's around the table with me. We have our guest, who is Barry Woodward. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Ash.
Where have you travelled from this morning?
Manchester.
Great. We'll hear a bit more about you and your story and your ministry in a few minutes, if that's okay. I'm going to introduce the folk, other folk around the table with me. I'm Ashley Cooper. I'm the principal here at Cliff and sharing in this conversation. But I'm sharing it with, who am I with?
So I'm Ali McKenzie. I'm the student welfare manager here at Cliff and I'm also on faculty. So I lecture in pastoral theology and spiritual practice.
That sounds really deep.
Very deep and very meaningful.
It always sounds meaningful. That's great. Ali, you've been around longer than I have at Cliff. How long have you been here?
Yeah, maybe 6-7 years in an adjunct lecturer capacity and then moved into the part-time role.
Okay. So how many days a week do you work for?
I do about 3.5, and I'm a psychotherapist when I'm not at Cliff.
That sounds even more exciting.
Well, it's got its days.
I'm sure it has. Also around the table we have...
Hello, I'm Jenny. I'm the student president here, also a master's student as well.
So you're a master's student, but you've been here for how many years?
This is my fourth year. I did the BA first for 3 years and then now full-time master's in 1 year.
In 1 year?
Yeah. How long have you been here, Ash?
Oh, that's a really good question. I've been here for 6 years. I'm in year seven. I started part-time, actually. I did a year half-time at Cliff and half-time in a local church appointment. Not necessarily sure that was the best option, but there we go. We did it, and now we're here full time, and excited about ministry here at Cliff. We've been in a. It seems like from the start of my journey, we've been in transition and change. We've renewed and revived all of our programs and our activity, and excited about what God has in store for us. And as we look forward, the purpose of this podcast is to look back and see where God has taken us over the years. And so the guests that we have with us over these next 6 podcasts are folk who've been at Cliff at some point and have gone on to do some incredible things for God in kingdom and ministry work. Mm. And we're looking forward to hearing those stories.
One of the amazing things about Cliff is that it embeds itself in someone's story and walk with God. And when you hear people reflect on where they are, often Cliff has been really significant.
Absolutely.
Massively.
I get to travel a little bit with Cliff, and all over the world there are folk who will start their conversation with me about it was either on the terrace at Cliff, it was at festival at Cliff, it was on that holy ground at Cliff that I started my journey with Jesus, or they'll start with a different way. They'll start by going 96 to 97. They'll start with their years that they were at Cliff College because they're so foundational. The years that they were at Cliff are foundational to who they are and the ministry that they now have.
It makes it an exciting place to work, doesn't it?
It does, because it's the people.
And it's sort of eternal.
It is.
Eternally wonderful.
And you know, and these conversations will remind us, particularly the staff, of the impact of these years at Cliff for the students that we get to engage in and their lives. Yeah. Amazing.
Let's go to an ad.
The Cliff Year is Cliff College's gap year for 18 to 25-year-olds. Running from September to June, the Cliff Year gives participants the opportunity to invest in themselves and their faith through encountering God in prayer, worship, and community, through being equipped by classroom and practical learning, and through engaging in hands-on mission and ministry in local church contexts. Find out more at cliffcollege.ac.uk/Cliff Year.
As we've said, good morning already, Barry. Just tell us a little bit about you and the ministry that you're involved in.
Well, I'm the author of a book called Once an Addict, which was published in 2007. And I am also the CEO of a charity called Proclaim Trust, which basically I got off the ground while I was a student here at Cliff. And we work in prisons. We run a conference called Fix for ex-addicts, recovering addicts, addicts and those who work with addicts. We get about 800 people coming to that every year. And we work with local churches doing outreach events throughout the UK.
That's amazing. I know a little of your ministry and I've seen images of that. It is an incredible ministry. And what we know is that kind of Cliff has been part of that journey with you. So what I want to do, before we get into a deep conversation, each of our guests is going to have 12 quick fire questions. All right?
Okay.
You've not seen these. This is meant to be a little bit of fun, so let's not take this too seriously. But here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
First thing that comes into your head to each of these questions. What years were you at Cliff?
97 to 99.
What's the favourite thing that you studied?
It would have been New Testament.
Okay. What room number did you sleep in?
Oh, I don't know about that one.
Do you know which floor it was?
The first floor and then the second floor. I've been on both floors in 2 years.
Yeah. Who was the principal?
Howard Miller.
Who was your favourite lecturer?
I think Paul Ashby.
Okay. Where did you go on mission?
I went to Peterhead, Canvey Island. I did a placement in Buckley Hall Prison for 10 days on my own.
How often did you walk up the edge?
Quite a lot, actually.
Okay.
And prayed at the same time. Okay. Yeah.
How many nights a week did you go to the bridge in?
I didn't go at all then.
You never went?
Never. No.
Okay.
No.
What was your favourite Cliff dish, food-wise?
Oh, I don't think I had a favourite dish. I can't remember them.
Did you have
them?
It must
have been that good. Yeah. Who was the food may have changed now, anyway. But anyway.
Who was your favourite student?
Oh, I had a lot of favourite students. There was a woman here called Ruth Mason. Okay. We got on really well. We had a good platonic relationship, friends.
Yeah,
and we still kind of connected through Facebook. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Andy Smith was also a good friend of mine, but he was a staff member, but he was a former student.
He was an evangelist, wasn't he?
He was an evangelist, yeah.
Are you still in touch with any students?
Through Facebook, yeah, 100%, okay. Yeah.
Final question. Did you ever break any rules?
I probably didn't.
Oh, were you a good boy?
No, because I'm an ex-criminal, so when I came here, I was really good. I was like, I'm a changed man.
Thank you for the quick fire questions. We're going to ask those to all our guests over the next few weeks.
Oh, well, that's a really lovely sort of intro to just exploring a bit about your time at Cliff. And you mentioned about maybe having had a bit of a colourful past. And, you know, sometimes when our students apply, they come in regular way or they come in at what we call non-standard entry. I've got a hunch you might have been a non-standard entry. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit about your time at
Cliff? So I'd had this encounter with God and I felt a clear call to be an evangelist, and I started to look at different colleges, and the one that trained evangelists was Cliff, even though I wasn't a Methodist. So I applied to come to Cliff and I came for an interview with Howard Miller. I'd only been a Christian 9 months. I remember sitting with Howard and he's saying, I think you'd be ideal, but you need to be a Christian 2 years before you can come. Yeah. You can apply next year, even though it's still not 2 years, and we're all right with that. And I was gutted. I was like, oh, no. So then I went to work voluntary for an organisation doing missional work, living in for a year, which filled in that gap. And then I came back in 1997 and started as a student. And to be honest, I was a bit intimidated. Because I had no qualifications. I didn't have no qualifications whatsoever. I had a passion to do the work, and you know, I wouldn't say I was but actually coming here, people was educated, and most people had come from kind of an educational background. So I was a bit intimidated with it. It was, here I am at Cliff College, you know, in those first few weeks, couple of months in particular. So it was a bit of a journey.
When you think back, what are the standout memories for you?
Standout memories. I think once saying to Howard saying to me, sorry, I think you could do a degree. Because I came here on they did a foundation course in those days, and that was like the way in. And I'd just come to do that. And I had a little bit of a few hundred pounds. I didn't have any funding or support, and the church gave me a little bit. I came in to do the foundation course, did that first assignment, did a second assignment. And then Howard, because he was my tutor, you see, and he said, I think you could do a degree. My personal tutor, I think you could do a degree because you've got, and I'm like, me do a degree? So then we flipped, I moved on to the degree course. That was massive for me, that for them saying that. So then we were sitting in the same lectures. I don't know how it works now, but we were sitting in the same lectures, but the assignments were slightly longer or questions were slightly different. So it was the same content we were getting, but it's kind of what you did with that. So that was a massive moment for me. Yeah, and a lot of the time for me, I used to come down early to the chapel in the morning before everybody got up, and I'd just lie on the floor and sit on the floor and pray, and I'd pray and I'd pray and I'd pray. And I was, so you asked about going down to the bridge. Well, I was always in my room, like, seeking God and praying and developing my... So this gave me a place to come to, because I'd lived in Moss Side. I was in the madness for years as an addict in and out of prison. And then I come here, I'm in this place that I was just like, man, this is mental, this is amazing. So it's like my spiritual, my growth, and I'm still living in after effects of those prayers today. You know, so the moments like that, the moments that I had in my room, somebody, Amanda, who was in the next room to me, she put something on Insta the other day saying, I remember being in the next room to her and all I could ever hear you was you praying. Yeah. And that was my reputation. And nobody had messed with me, you know what I mean? Because I'd tell them, you know what I mean? Cause, but it was just that, them kind of memories like that. And so many, I mean, you've asked for a couple, I could tell you millions, but that's just... That come to mind straight away. Yeah.
So really formative in growing 100%. Growing your relationship 100%. With God as well. And it sounds like you put your roots down here and that they have stayed strong. Jenny, I mean, how does that make you think or feel, you know, listening here, living upstairs?
It's amazing, really amazing. For me, we did a 24 hours of prayer last semester. And so definitely there was something special, I think, between about 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. being in the chapel and praying. There was something really special about that time. So I get what you mean about going down early and just being in that space.
Mm. Yeah.
Cliff is often described as a thin place. And I hear that from my fellow students, ones that live away and come on site for the week. It's really cool to hear how they grow closer to God. And there are some moments where you just really feel that thinness.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Things have changed slightly here at Cliff in that we don't have quite as many residential students who live on site. There's folk who come in for teaching weeks at different points because society's changed, culture's changed, and education's changed. But I just hope those who are living on site now, listening to this, just understand the value of the time that they have here. Mm. I don't think, until they leave often, our students don't realise how formative this is. And as I said earlier, I meet former students all over the world who talk about the time they spent at Cliff has been absolutely foundational, both for ministry, but also for their relationship with Jesus. Those rhythms that are kind of 100%. Built into their life here, as they look back, are what actually sustain them in ministry as they journey on. Barry, thank you for sharing a bit about your time at Cliff. What happened to you when you left Cliff? Tell us about that, because I'm guessing that's a few years ago now. What's your journey been like since leaving Cliff?
So while I was here, I knew what my path was going to be. It was very clear, but in what as a, to work as doing missional work, and I was an evangelist, and that was me. That was my set. That's where I was going to be locked into. But when I left here, while I was here, I set up Proclaim Trust because I needed an administration framework to work through. See, sometimes you need to create what you want to be part of. And I had ideas, I had dreams, I had plans for the future, but how am I going to facilitate that? I can't just be like a lone ranger. So while I was here in my second year, I approached trustees and we got busy setting up a charity. So on my graduation day here at Cliff, I became the CEO of Proclaim Trust. We had £10 in the bank. And we still got £10 in the bank. And that was the... So I had the charity, the framework, and I had all these ideas. And it was to do with... And I started to do stuff abroad. I went to India, I went to Sri Lanka, Argentina. And I started to do, like, going into all the world. And that was okay. And then I was doing stuff in the UK. I took teams to Ibiza. I was reaching out to clubbers in 2000 because I used to be a DJ. And when I came here, it was like, you don't do that anymore. That's all kind of your history. But when I got here, I was inspired to use that as a tool by Andy Smith, who was a mate of mine. Because he had a set of decks in the room upstairs from where we sat. And I started to do the DJing. And I was a good DJ. I could mix really well. Late Night Extra that you used to have, I don't know if you still have it, but certainly the conferences, I was DJing at that. And I started to take teams to Ibiza. And that's where I felt I'd found my sweet spot, reaching out to clubbers, because it was part of my world. So going back to my own people. So I was doing all this other stuff. But that was like, that's where I need to be, reaching my own people. So I did a bit of general stuff at first. But then I'm in India with an interpreter. And I'm thinking, why am I here? He can speak better than me. He can speak their language. And my culture, the drugs, the crime, the background, the madness, doesn't connect in a third world country as much, because it's another completely different landscape. So I started to look at changing things, and that was the the start, and I'm in my spot now proper, but then it was kind of finding the fit.
Let me just pause you a second, because I want to just take you back. How did it feel going back into a culture that you felt God had kind of, in one sense, pulled you out of, healed you, restored you, put you through cliff, and then you step back as a different person, transformed into a culture that's been so hard and tough?
When I was here in my final year, because I didn't finish the degree, because the year 2000 was approaching, and there was a lot of talk about the millennium and opportunities, and you was doing stuff at Cliff then. You was doing the youth work, I remember. So, yeah. But while I was seeking kind of my future, it was like where Moses had been brought up in Egypt, but then God sent him back because he understood the language, he understood the culture. So when I went back to Ibiza, I recruited teams. A lot of them were former Cliff students. I went there 3 times. I would DJ, and we had different people who were into creative things, people waving flags, but I'm not talking about the usual, but really creative, top, artist painting as I was DJing, and people chatting. Just, we wasn't there to preach and be, you know, it was just very relational, conversational, reaching out to clubbers. And going back to that, for me, I felt I was the right man for the job because I wasn't fazed by, same now working in prisons, I go into a prison, they're swearing, the murderers, I'm fine with all that because it doesn't faze me. So I've been built for this. Yeah. And I think going back into that and finding your worth in that, the value comes from that because there's me that's doing this. Others could do it. I couldn't do your job, Ash, but it's knowing where and for me, but it took a while. But going back, it was like, oh, this is good.
I like that concept. You just kind of shared about, I understand the culture, I understand the language. Yeah. So God called you out of it. You get relationship with Jesus, you get the equipping and how to share and communicate faith and gospel, and then God sends you right back into the midst of it with the same people, your people, to communicate faith in the midst of it. That is a really incredible journey, actually. And Cliff in the middle of that.
Yeah, and he's built you for it.
Yeah.
You know, he has redeemed and restored and enabled.
Yeah.
It makes sense of life, doesn't it?
It's a bit of a journey, I must admit, at the beginning, because when I came here, obviously, I wasn't DJing. I'd got rid of all my music, and I was listening to just Christian stuff. So I think I needed that for a time. But when I went to my first house group upstairs with Andy, who was the house group leader at that time, he had some Technics turntables in the corner, and I went over and I turned them on. I got 2 records out of his crate and straight in time in key, and he was like, "Mate, can you mix?" I said, "Yeah, I was been to." And I came down to my room and I was like, "Oh God, forgive me! Oh God, take these thoughts away." You know, I felt really bad because I DJed, but Andy, he was like, "Man, you need to use that for God," and he was like, "You need to use that for God," and that for me was massive. Even now, the way that I communicate, breaking out of the mold of just doing something that everybody else is doing.
That is amazing.
That's amazing. It reminds me of Rowan Williams talking about, you know, nothing's wasted in God's economy, and things that we would throw away as rubbish, he makes beautiful.
He does, 100%.
What I found really interesting about it is you mirrored your story onto the Moses story. That's really fascinating. Mm. That brought up in Egypt, withdraws out, but God sends him back.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. I thought it was a really, really helpful analogy. And I guess many of our listeners will be able to kind of reflect on that particular journey, how God has used them in the cultures of which they find themselves.
Yeah, and we can be so judgy about ourselves sometimes. Yeah. And God is not, you know, God thinks differently, doesn't he, to us?
Yeah.
And we can be judgy about cultures that we don't understand. Whereas it's a culture you fully understand, and God puts you're the right person. Mm-hmm. Don't put me in a club in Ibiza, Barry. It's never going to work, is it? But to put you back into the place that you understand with a gospel mindset
100%.
Is fascinating.
Yeah.
You journey a little bit, of course, that you talk about Ibiza and the clubbing, but where does prisons then come into that? How does that transition happen?
Into that same lane, my background. So I DJed for a number of years, and I trained a couple of others to beat mix on that in that process. But then it's kind of, I did a placement, as I mentioned before, at Buckley Hall Prison. I didn't think prison work was going to be something I was going to be doing a lot of, and I did a little bit of it. But then in 2008, some of the listeners will remember, there was an initiative called OPO 8, and it was basically a a brand that people could come under, and local churches, organisations did missional work throughout the UK. So we did Opo 8 in Prisons tour. Mm. That was the first tour we did. We did about 12, 14 venues throughout the UK. And at the end of that year, I said to the team, we can't not do that again, because we saw loads of people respond. It was effective. So this needs to be part of what we're doing, because it's putting me in front of my own people again. Mm. This is part of the... So that was the kind of... So the DJ I was doing, probably doing a little bit in 2008, but I was letting that go, because my main thing was always communication, public speaking. That was my main strength. And then it was kind of like, okay, so we started to make prisons work part of the... Now I do... This year, I'm probably doing 54 events in prisons.
Wow.
Throughout the UK. Wow. That's just the prisons work we've got. Apart from that, we're doing lots of other stuff with the rehabs and church. So the prisons came. So when I'm in a jail, that's like being in Ibiza to me, because I'm reaching those people, same people, you know, criminals. Some of them have been into clubbing. Most of them have been into drugs. Of course, there's exceptions, but you can't generalise and put everybody, you know, in the same. But so I'm still reaching those people, but I'm doing it through going into prisons.
And what does that look like when you pitch up at a prison? Are you going in? Tell us a bit about...
So we plan well. We do everything the best that we can from our side. So we've got a small team. Amber, our events manager, will send posters in advance. We provide... We've got a follow-up DVD that we make accessible. They can download it online now, watch it online. Or we've just had an old-school DVD, which DVDs are still quite active in jails because people have DVD players. So I will turn up. It will be usually through the chaplaincy, nine times out of ten. Sometimes it's through the drugs organisation, like DARTs, or there's different setups in different places where if a jail has got that happening. Nine times out of ten, it's through the chaplaincy, and I will go in and do an event in the week. We'll probably have an hour and a half or an hour. I will speak for 35, 40 minutes, questions and answers. That's the general gist. Sometimes it's a Sunday morning, like last weekend I was in HMP Honley. It was an hour service. We had a local church in there doing the music, and I spoke for 25 minutes. And we'll give people an opportunity to respond, to make a connection with God for the first time, or reconnect if they've messed up. That's the general thing. Mm-hmm. More recently, for the last 14 months, we started a new thing called Your Stories Reframed, which is something we do, say, outside. Something we do, a course generally, but we've tailored it for prisoners. Mm. So now we've started to train prisoners how to tell their stories in 10 minutes. So that's a new thing, a more recent thing, trying to duplicate what I'm doing. Some of these have got faith, some of them haven't. So we see it's kind of pre-missional, very relational, because you're chatting with people all the time and you're not going in there and doing a response, but you're going in there and training people. Some of them have faith, so they talk about the faith, but throughout that process of that course, me being in there and the correspondence we have with them, then obviously they're hearing stories and my story, other people's stories, and then so it's pre-missional for us. But that's something new we've been doing. Yeah,
that's so exciting. And I mean, that's not easy work. Although, I mean, when you speak about it, it's as if it comes very naturally to you. What's your motivation? What keeps you doing it?
My motivation is, obviously, I've met with God, man, and he's encountered my life big time, and I've got this cracking relationship going on with him, and I want others to know that. Yeah. And it's knowing that that's my fit. That's where I'm meant to be. And obviously, I take others in with me sometimes. The guys who have been in Your Stories Reframed, we've had them into prisons. Mm. One guy, Alistair, who was on last year's course, he's actually going into a jail in 3 weeks' time on his own. He's been in with me. He's going on his own. So the idea is to equip and enable and to release. It's not about them being, you know, we want to get more people out there doing that. We also provide content as well to be streamed into prisons. We do a conference, as I mentioned before, called Fix. Well, that will get streamed, or it has been. The year before has already been streamed into 60% of UK jails through an organisation that produce content, educational content. And we also send that content in on DVDs. So we're getting content going into the prison cells all the time. So it's kind of like keeping it going.
Yeah.
And my book as well, we've sent 52,500 copies of that out for free into prisons.
Wow.
So it's saturating, keeping going, being consistent, keeping going.
Yeah.
And you do that for long enough,
You see results. Yeah. So that addictions work alongside the prisons work marries at times, but they're their own thing as well.
They are. Yeah, 100%, yeah. So on Sunday morning, just as an example I mentioned only, there were people in there who have been addicts or are addicts. There's people in there who are not. There's some really savvy kind of business type people in there, you know, gang culture, you're hitting all of that. They're not smoking weed, but not like using hard crack heroin drugs like I was into. So you're reaching a population, like a people group.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that is my sweet spot.
Yeah, it's amazing. Barry, that's been a really, really amazing conversation just to inspire. Jenny, I just wonder, as a current student, listening to all of that, what's going through your mind as you're listening to all of that about where we are now as Cliff?
It's amazing. It's a really amazing story. You're a fascinating guy. I think what really struck me about that is parts of your story ring so true for so many of our current students. Quite a lot of students are non-standard entry. Some of them are standard entry, but still aren't kind of the most,
academic.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, they didn't come here to go on to do like a PhD kind of thing. And I think, seeing parts of your story and some of the students here and thinking, well, where are they going to be in 20 years? You know, what's God calling them to do? I think it's really, really cool. I think as a student, it's going to, encourage me to learn from all the other students around me a bit more, I think. Yeah, and really kind of encourage others to like look back into their context and look back where they came from to help them see where they're going in the future. I'm in my last year. Everyone's asking me, where are you going to go next? What's next for you? So I think, it's on my mind at the moment. Where am I going? So I think, reflecting where I've been as well is important.
Barry, before we let you go and conclude a bit of this conversation, one of the things we're going to ask each of our guests is kind of, what are the three kind of clear hacks or top tips that you've learned on your journey or you wish you'd known at the beginning of the journey?
Okay, I think, firstly, you don't need to do what everybody else is doing. Because there's a lot of people doing a lot of things. And when you think of where you've come from, and what your fit might be, what could you do that's going to make a difference in an area where nobody else is making a difference? And I think I've touched on this as well. Don't go it alone.
Yeah.
It's important to be accountable. So I've got this freedom to do all that I do. I'm only free because I'm accountable first to my local church, the denomination as well, because that gives you all the things you know, but and then accountable to my trustees. A lot of people will have ideas and, the church, you're not going to get me, or they're not going to see what I want to see. If the church don't see it, then that you need someone who will. And I think also within that kind of surround yourself with positive people, because negative people will stop you going where God wants you to go. And I think finally, finding your lane and sticking in it. So for me, as I mentioned, I started to speak in different parts of the world, finding my fit. And then eventually I narrowed it down to doing so many things, doing a few things really, 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 really well. Could I lead a church? I probably could. Could I do this? There's a lot of things I could do, but what am I meant to be doing? So finding my lane for me, so proclaim trust does several things. Just a few things, really. So it's the prisons work, it's the outreach events. Now we do the conference, which we've done for 10 years, and then obviously more recently. But we try and do them really, really, really well. But all of them point to the lane that I'm meant to be in. So when opportunities come, we could, because I have had other offers and opportunities, and when we've been skint, when we've still had £10 in the bank, then, you know, you're like, well, I'd be helpful for that. But it's kind of finding your lane. What's my lane? I can go into jails and feel comfortable with them effing and jeffing and talking about things that some people will be offended with. Don't bother me. Don't faze me. But then I'm going to get up and talk about my faith in God and the faith journey that they can have and God can connect with them. And so it's knowing what your fit is and staying there.
Barry, that's great.
Thank you.
All right, so that was just so inspiring to listen to that. We're just going to spend a few moments now reflecting, I guess, and pulling out threads that seemed to really strike us.
Yes.
So I suppose I want to kick off by just reminding those listening to us that Barry exists within a framework, if you like. So if anyone has really been struck by what he shared of his story, they can find out a bit more about him on Proclaim Trust on their website. They can follow him on Insta and Facebook. They can catch up. And anybody who's interested or is currently working with addicts or has a bit of that in their own story, perhaps it's really worth just having a look at the Fixed Conference as well. It's an amazing event that will really resource and equip you in your ongoing work or perhaps in your discernment of whether that's something for you going forward. So it would be lovely for people to really sort of take some of this energy and harness it in their own work if that's relevant. I mean, Ash, Jenny, where do you start? There was so much that sort of resonated and so much that excited me and so much that, you know, I thought, oh, I don't want to lose that.
I know. There was some key things, and particularly looking at where we are mm-hmm. in relation to where Cliff was, Barry, when you were here, I think the bit about you were saying about how you were shaped, mm-hmm. I think that sense of being shaped and formed while you're at Cliff is really important. And we need to kind of think about how we are shaping well our students. I think one of the things I'm really excited about at the moment, and I know this was the norm when you were here, is the new degree that we have just launched this last September really puts mission and mission placement at the heart of the degree. That kind of connection between the classroom and the front line of mission is reconnected. We kind of lost our way, I think, a little bit as Cliff over the years, but we've kind of, within the new degree program, both the undergrad and the new MA program that's coming online, it's very missional focused. It's every student. You can't get away now at Cliff without going on placement and being with people and communicating faith in different contexts. So that's put back right at the heart of who we are, because it's really important to us. So I was just encouraged as you were talking to go, actually, I think we are doing the right things and putting programs in that are right in this context.
And I was struck by the way Barry talked about his placements and your work, really. You know, a man after God's own heart, aren't you? You know, you did the work, like you were up for it. And there is something there in that partnership dynamic that's very special, isn't there? That, you know, we just want our students to be able to run with what we offer.
Yeah. The other thing I thought, Barry, was really interesting was that you gave that clear kind of statement of you don't need to be somebody else. You don't need to try and do what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
You just need to do what you're called to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The unique you. God has called you as an individual with all your backstory. You don't lose all that. All of that stuff is still part of your story.
Yeah.
God redeems it and then uses it for his purposes, which is just fascinating.
And that lovely phrase you said at one point, you know, you need to create what you want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And I think, who doesn't need to be reminded of that? It's not just going to appear on a plate, is it? Mm-hmm. Well, occasionally it does, but often we need to be sort of co-authoring with God how we work for him and with him. And I think that's pretty amazing. Jenny, what about you and, you know, feelings arise as you're listening?
I agree with Ash about the mission placements. I chose to do a mission placement on my degree and I thought it was a really good opportunity to just have a go at something that I didn't feel I was naturally good at. I tried all sorts of things on my placements and I learned so much, and I did a bit of that learning what does work and what doesn't work. And so I think, using your time at Cliff as a real kind of sandbox to get in there and play and mess about and see what you do feel you have skills in, what you don't feel you have skills in, you know, having that opportunity where it's a safe environment where you get that feedback, you get that support from people. You know, the community around you is there and supporting you, relationships with staff members, relationships with students, really encouraging you to kind of explore what God has that call on your life for, I think.
And that lovely sort of sense and promise that God will equip when he calls.
Yeah,
he will. You know, we're not going out to fail. We're going out in his strength.
Yeah.
All that's left for me to do is to thank everyone around the table. First of all, Barry, thank you so much for travelling. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for sharing your heart and your story. And thank you for just keeping Cliff at heart with you on your journey, because I know you're passionate about Cliff 100%. And the part Cliff has played in your journey, and that's really encouraging, because our best advocates actually folk like you. Folk whose lives have been shaped and formed during their time at Cliff and then are out in the world. So keep talking about Cliff as you journey, but we will continue to pray for you, for your ministry, and we love hearing the stories that are happening around Proclaim Trust and all that you're involved in. Ali, my co-presenter. Ali, thanks so much. We'll see her together,
Ash,
as we journey forward. And our student rep today, the student president, Jenny, thank you so much for sharing in conversation with us. Join us next time as we continue in Ministry Roadmaps, a podcast of Cliff College.
Thank you for listening to Ministry Roadmaps, a podcast from Cliff College. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Get in touch by email at roadmaps@cliffcollege.ac.uk. Or find us at Cliff College on X.